We are holding on Chof Aleph Amud Aleph, just past the Mishnah, the beginning of the Gemara. Okay, we learned in the Mishnah a couple of dinim about rent, about selling and renting real estate to goyim.
Right.
We said we had Reb Meir saying in the Mishnah that you're not allowed to rent them a house even in Eretz Yisrael, let alone sell it. Selling would be also daraisa because lo sachanim. Renting it to them would be also derabanan. Not so much houses really as buildings, and the Mishnah says that you're not allowed. That even when you're allowed to rent it to them, it's not a place to live because they'll end up bringing up a desire into it. But so in Eretz Yisrael, says their mayor, hello, so you're not allowed to rent them buildings. Needless to say, not fields, as the Gemara will discuss.
Right.
In Syria, which we said are the areas where David conquered without the full sanction of Beis Din. Actually, Rashi says it a little bit differently. Rashi says that it was Shaloy Apia Dibur. It wasn't based on the word of Hashem from a Navi, and it wasn't with Shishim Riboy. It wasn't with the participation of the entire Jewish people, 600,000 people. Tosfos asks on that based on a couple of details about that. We find that there are people who conquered individual areas of Eretz Yisrael, and those are considered full-fledged Eretz Yisrael. So Tosfos says, as I was mentioning yesterday, the fact that as long as he hadn't conquered all of Eretz Yisrael proper, he had no business conquering foreign countries. Anyway, whatever it is, Syria is therefore quasi-Eretz Yisrael.
So they have the word of Hashem to conquer Syria?
Apparently not. I mean, he had the word of Hashem, I guess, to go fight against them, but not necessarily to conquer it and take it over. Anyway, that's how Rashi learned. Tosfos says that what it is he didn't have the right to before he had conquered Eretz Yisrael proper. So Reb Meir had said that in Syria you're allowed to rent them houses, just not fields. In Chutz Laaretz, anywhere else in the world, you'd be allowed to sell them houses or rent them fields. That's Reb Meir. Reb Yossi is Makel one step. He changes each thing by one step. In Eretz Yisrael, you're allowed to rent them houses, just not fields. In Syria, you're allowed to sell them houses, you're allowed to rent fields. In Chutz Laaretz, you would be able to sell them either one, both fields, both houses and both buildings and fields. And we finished off the Mishnah by saying that the building can't be a place to live because he'll bring in Avodah Zarah.
What is Syria? Is it Eretz Yisrael?
So that's what we're saying. Syria is like sort of quasi Eretz Yisrael. It's half Eretz Yisrael, half Chutz Laaretz. You know, it's brought in Chassidus, the idea that whenever you have two things on different levels, there always has to be something in between. There always has to be some transitional thing between them that's sort of half one and half the other. There's a mimer of the Rebbe Rashab that talks about it in connection even with the four kingdoms in the world. Domim Sameach Chayim Medaber, the inanimate, the animate, the vegetable, the animal, and the human. That each one also has something that's sort of halfway between one and the other. So the same thing here. There's Eretz Yisrael, there's Chutz Laaretz, so that's Syria, which is sort of halfway in between. Okay, fine. So the Gemara starts off. My ain tzarich leimas zodeh. So what do we mean when Reb Meir had said in the Mishnah that in Eretz Yisrael you're not allowed to rent a goya house, or building rather, and needless to say, not fields. What's the needless to say? Elema mishum de isbe taut, de isba taut. Yeah, you're going to say because if... Okay, fine. That's the band. Okay, so... If you say then that you're not allowed to rent them fields, mishum de isba tauti, because you could argue there are two factors involved with a field. Chada chanoyas karka. One is that now they're going to have a permanence in the land, which we just said before you're not allowed to give them a permanence in Eretz Yisrael. Chada mishum de kamachgalomi ma'aser. And then you have another issue, which is that now this piece of land is going to be taken out of having ma'aser, and the other mitzvahs that depend that take place only in Eretz Yisrael aren't going to happen in it anymore. You could argue that's why Reb Meir is saying, needless to say, you shouldn't be renting them fields, because not only are you giving them chanoya b'karka, but also you're causing it that mitzvahs will not happen on this piece of land. The problem with that is, in that case, then in that case, you could argue by that logic, when it comes to houses, when it comes to buildings, you also have two things. Again, number one, you're giving them a permanence in Eretz Yisrael, first of all. And second of all, you could argue, the same logic as you're saying a field that you rent to a goy now is not going to have the mitzvahs that depend on Eretz Yisrael take place in it, no shmita, no meiser, etc. Well, by the same logic, a house that you rent them isn't going to have a mezuzah in it. So then, isn't it the same thing? The answer is, Amar Rav Masharshi, mezuzah choyvet hadorhu. The answer is, Rav Masharshi says, mezuzah is not an obligation on the house itself. The obligation is on the person who lives there. which is this is relevant for other areas in halacha as well. It means, for example, if Reuven rents Shimon a house, for example, it's not Reuven is obligated to put up the mezuzah, it's Shimon who lives there. So by the same, so in other words, in lomdasha terms, in brisker terms, it's a chayvus gabra rather than a chayvus chesta, as opposed to the mitzvahs atloyas ba'aretz, meiser and shmita, and the rest of them are chayvus chesta. They belong to this piece of land. So you were asking yesterday about selling an animal to a goy, where won't that prevent mitzvahs from being done with it as well? Same idea. The mitzvah, as I was saying to you at the end of it, the mitzvahs involving animals are not a chayvus gabra either. They're a chayvus chesta. Or rather, the other way around, sorry, they're not a chayvus chesed, they're a chayvus gavra. You want to eat a piece of meat, you have to sheft it properly, and so forth. So that's exactly what it is then. That is why Rav Meir is saying in the Mishnah that if you can't rent them a building, how much more so you can't rent them a field, because then you're making it that now this field is not going to have the mitzvahs that are dependent on Eretz Yisrael take place in it. Tosfos discusses at some length over here the issue. There is a machlokas in a number of places in Shas. So if a goy owns a piece of land in Eretz Yisrael, is it in fact chayev in these mitzvahs or not? Or do we say once a goy has acquired it, it actually becomes potter? All Gemara could be understood either way, because it could either mean that actually this piece of land now has none of these chiyuvim on it, because it belongs to a goy, or you could say, of course it does, but practically speaking, the goy is not going to take maaser from his produce. He's not going to let it lie unused during shmita, etc.
Hashem promised the land to the Yidden.
That's fine, but there is an opinion in a few places in Shas that says that if a goy buys land in Eretz Yisrael, that piece of land now becomes, it's not chayiv in mitzvah satlo yisbara. What do you mean, how could it? Because the fact is, you're not allowed to sell it to him, but it could happen. And look, I mean, nowadays you have, unfortunately, large parts of Eretz Yisrael are in the hands of the goy. So, yeah.
Well, they haven't been reconquered, really.
That's not the point. The point still remains that Goyim will want to attack us. That is true. But even not those. Even the friendlier Goyim over there, the fact is some of them own pieces of land. Is it right? Is it right? Not necessarily.
Not necessarily an example
The point still remains. Yeah, well, that's also true. Shmita nowadays is only did up on it. And by the way, now that you mention it, actually, this whole Gemara over here and all this discussion about whether you're allowed and not allowed to sell land in Eretz Yisrael to Goyim factors into the whole question of the famous Heter Mechira that the Israeli rabbinate does every 7 years to temporarily sell the land to the Goyim so that they should be able to work it during Shmita. This whole Gemara factors into that and into that whole question. Okay. Tosfos, by the way, also goes on to point out that when it comes to a house also, in principle, then a house outside of Eretz Yisrael, Midaraisa, you should not be obligated to put a mezuzah on it, because after all, if you rent it, because it's not yours after all, Midarabanan, once you're renting it for 30 days, then you become obligated to put a mezuzah on it.
If it's the opinion of who lives there, who owns it.
No, but that's not the point, though. That's not the point. Tosfos says, therefore, that a house outside Eretz Yisrael is not, to a certain extent, really considered your house. That's what I was mentioning yesterday at the end. That's one of the heterim that Tosfos talks about and the Shach talks about and so forth. One of the fact is, nowadays we see people do rent houses and buildings and fields and whatever to goyim. People do sell it to them. How is that allowed? Part of the answer is, especially in Chutzlaret, is one of the heterim is because the real estate doesn't really belong to us anyway. The fact is we have to pay taxes on it to the goyim. So therefore, in that sense, it's not completely ours. I mentioned yesterday the fact that if you rent somebody a place and he has a lease, then you can't easily evict him.
If you live there but you don't own it, you have to put a mezuzah, right?
Tosfos is saying that's only midrabanan. The whole concept that you should have to put a mezuzah on a rented house in Chutz Lareitz, Tosfos says it's only midrabanan. All right, anyway, let's go on. Okay.
How do we know that? I mean,
because Tosfos is saying, because it's not really considered your house. So that's all. Okay.
Then it's fixed in stone. What I want to know is, where does Tosfos know that
Tosfos points out, we have the Gemara in Menachos, where it talks about all the dinim of mezuzah, says that you potter the first 30 days anyway. So what is it? If it was Deraisa, you'd be obligated right away. The fact is that the fact that you potter the first 30 days implies that the only reason you chayiv afterwards is Dirabanan.
Where did you get from the Torah that you're part of?
Because it's not Beisecha. Because Beisecha, Chas Rama Zuzah Beisecha.
Buy a house.
But not buy, rent. Rent, we're talking about. Renting.
Okay, so you're talking about renting.
We're talking about renting, that's what I just said. Okay, let's go on. All right. Fine. We said Besuria Maskirim Basim Kola. We said in Syria you're allowed to rent, according to the mayor, you're allowed to rent a goy, a building, but not a field. So the question is, my shna mechira deloy. So what's the difference? Why you're saying not allowed to sell them a field? Why you're not allowed to rent it? Why you're not allowed to sell them a field in Syria? Mishum mechira de'aretz Yisrael. Presumably the reason is because we're concerned that you may then confuse it with Eretz Yisrael. You may think if you're allowed to sell them one in Syria, then you'll be allowed to sell them one equally well in Eretz Yisrael. And we just said you can't because chanoya b'karka. Well, then, we should make a similar gzera as far as tzchiros. We should say you can't rent them a house in Syria because you might come to rent to them in Eretz Yisrael. The answer is, he goof a gzera, renting them in Eretz Yisrael itself is only a gzera de rabbanon. We said midaraisa, it's only you're not allowed to sell it to them, because that would be chanoya b'karka. Rental would be allowed to darai, so it's just the chachamim after it, because then you may come to sell it to them. You want the chachamim to make a gzera on a gzera. We don't do that. Therefore, Rav Meir says it's allowed. Okay. The question is, what about renting a field to a goy in Syria? We're renting a field in Syria is a gzera on top of a gzera, because we're saying that Surya is only chayav in mitzvahs afloyes ba'aretz d'rabbanan, and the whole concept of not renting it to them is only because you may come to sell it to them. So that's a gzera on top of a gzera. Yeah. The Gemara is assuming at this point that, again, it's a similar kind of thing. That we're making a gzera. The Gemara is assuming that the reason why it's gzera l'gzera is we're assuming that you're not supposed to rent to them a field in Syria because you may come to rent it to them in Eretz Yisrael, and renting itself in Eretz Yisrael is also because you may come to sell it to them, so therefore it's a gzera l'gzera. The answer is hosam la gzera. The answer is when it comes to Syria, it's not a gzera on top of a gzera. Because Reb Meir in our Mishnah holds kibush yachid shmei kibush. He holds that this that we're talking about, that David did a kibush yachid, that he did a private conquest of Syria, either, again, as Rashi said, that he didn't have the 600,000 Jews and Alpia Dibur, or as Tosfos is saying, because he hadn't fully conquered Eretz Yisrael itself yet. Reb Meir holds that doesn't matter. Kibush yachid shmei kibush. He holds that such a kibush is considered a valid kibush. Therefore, Syria, according to him, is considered fully Eretz Yisrael as far as mitzvah satzlo is part of. No, the halacha is not like that, but we're talking according to Reb Meir. Yeah. All right. So Reb Meir would say that the same mitzvahs afloyes ba'aretz that apply in Eretz Yisrael also apply in Syria. Therefore, sada de isbe tauti gozer be'rabbanon. So a field where, again, you have two factors involved in selling it to a goy. Number one, you're giving him a permanence in the land, chanoya b'karka, which we said is also. Number two is you're preventing mitzvahs afloyes ba'aretz and happening with this piece of land. Therefore, gozer be'rabbanon. Therefore, the rabbanon made the gzera. Don't rent the field to them because of those two things. Because you may come to sell it to them. Batim the less hotarki. When it comes to buildings, where it's true, fine. Granted, Reb Meir is saying that Syria is considered part of Eretz Yisrael for that purpose. But the fact of the matter is, on a daraisa level, all that would be also therefore is to sell them a building, not to rent. Renting a building to them, even in Eretz Yisrael proper, would not be also daraisa because not chanoya b'karka. Eventually, the rental period is going to be over and the guy's going to leave. So batim the less bohutarki, so houses, buildings where there aren't those two factors, like Gozru, or Rabbanon, that Rabbanon did not make such a gzera, and therefore they said, fine, and Eretz Yisrael, we're going to make such a gzera, don't rent them a house. We're not going to extend it as far as saying that you can't sell it to them in Syria. To begin with, when they made their gzera, they only applied it to Eretz Yisrael proper. As opposed to Sada, Reb Meir is saying, applies equally well in Eretz Yisrael and in Syria.
There's no concern that by renting that they might not leave, they might stay there and not leave?
No, because, I mean, you rent, you have a lease or whatever, and once the rental period is over, if the guy doesn't want to leave, you take him to court and evict him.
Right. And it doesn't take 2 years not to do that.
Also true. Okay. Anyway. All right. What about then, we said, according to the mayor, in Chutzla Aretz, you're allowed to sell them houses and you're allowed to rent them fields. So again, sada de ispe tauti gozer b'hur abanan. So again, the idea is that when it comes to a field, when it comes to a field in Eretz Yisrael or in Syria, you do have the two considerations that we said before. Therefore, the Rabbanan made a gzera, therefore, that said, don't go selling a field to a goy in Chutzlaret because you may come to sell them one in Eretz Yisrael or in Syria. You may not realize the difference. Even though, of course,
parallel to,
yeah, Yeah, well, but it's different. Batim, the less Bohutati, like goes to Rabbanon. Again, houses, there aren't the two factors. So the Chachamim did not make a Gzeira on it in the first place, and therefore you're allowed to sell it, and therefore you're allowed to sell it to them in Chutz La'aretz. And again, now once we establish that even according to the mayor, and Rabbi Yossi is even more mayful than that, according to the mayor, even you're allowed to sell them a house in Chutz La'aretz, and according to Rabbi Yossi, all the more so, it comes out, therefore, that sitting, and obviously, that would be talking about pretty much all the Rishonim say. That would be even if you're selling it to them to live in, because, okay, they may bring up a Dezara in there. Who cares? It's not your house. It's different if it was a rental, because then it still belongs to you. But that is also one of the factors that goes into this, that the fact that we rent houses to Goyim nowadays is also based on the idea. If we're saying that you're allowed to sell them a house in Chutz La'aretz, then maybe there's not that much of an issue with renting them a house either. There may be the Avodah Zarah issue. Okay, so again, like I said yesterday, you have different Tosfos and other Rishonim talk about that maybe nowadays the Goyim typically don't bring Avodah Zarah into their houses. That's one idea. But another idea... You still have Goyim worship Avodah Zarah in India and in other places. But it's not as common as it used to be. So that's one of the factors. That's one of the factors, but also one of the ideas. Once you're allowed to sell them a house, then already there's less of an issue with renting them one either. That was all Rav Meir so far. Next, let's analyze Rav Yossi. Rav Yossi, I'm about Eretz Yisrael, maskirim lahem batim chol. Rav Yossi says in Eretz Yisrael, you're allowed to rent them buildings, just not fields. So unlike Rav Meir says that you can't rent them buildings or fields, Rav Yossi allows you to rent them buildings. Again, my time of sodis v'isbutarti gozer v'rabonim, same idea as before. Fields, there are two factors involved, kanoya b'karka and taking it out from Truma and Meister and the other chiyuvim that depend on Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, gozer v'rabonim. So again, the rabonim, even according to Rav Yossi, made a gzera not to rent them fields. Bottom, the less Bahutarki, when it comes to buildings where there aren't those two factors, there's only the one factor of Kanoya Bakarka, like Gozer Bahurabanan, that Abanan did not find it necessary to make a Zeta not to rent it to them because that might lead to selling it to them, says Rav Yossi. Then over Surya Merchlin, we said Rav Yossi says in Surya it's more lenient. You're allowed to sell them houses, you're allowed to rent them fields. My time, so why is that? Kasaba kibush yachad loishme kibush. Because Rav Yossi holds, unlike Rav Meir, that David's conquest of that area is not considered a full-fledged conquest. It doesn't become an extended part of Eretz Yisrael. It becomes what we say all over the place in Halacha, that Syria is semi-Eretz Yisrael, but not completely. To the extent that the mitzvah sakloyis barat applying it is only dirabanan. Therefore, again, the sada di ispatarti goes barabanan. So again, a field where there are the two factors involved, if you were to sell such a field in Eretz Yisrael, then you'd have the two problems of Chanoya Bakarka and Mitzvah Saplois Baret. Therefore, Gozer Barabonon, so that Abonon made a Gzeda, don't rent it to them, just like in Eretz Yisrael. But in the less Bohutauki buildings where there aren't those two factors, like Gozer Barabonon, again, that Abonon did not make such a Gzeda. And then over Chutz La'aretz. So in other words, so far the major difference between Rav Meir, the major underlying difference between Rav Meir and Rav Yossi is the question: what is the status of Syria? Is it considered completely a part of Eretz Yisrael? And therefore, we're just saying that when the Chachamim made the Gzeira about not renting in Eretz Yisrael, they applied it to fields. That is, they applied it to Syria as well, whereas they didn't when it comes to houses. Or is it that Syria is not really considered part of Eretz Yisrael, and therefore there's less reason for Gzeira in the first place? Then we said of a Chutz La'aretz Merchlin Chula, Rav Yossi had said that in Chutz La'aretz you're allowed to sell them a house or a field. My time, why is that? Given the Merachas like Gazrinan, because Rav Yossi says since Chutz La'aretz is far away from Eretz Yisrael, there's no reason to make such a gzeira. We're not concerned like Rav Meir is concerned that if you're allowed to sell them in Chutz La'aretz, you may come to sell them in Eretz Yisrael. They're far enough apart that nobody's going to confuse one with the other.
Do you include in Eretz Yisrael ever Yavdim?
On the face of it, yes. But in many places, in Halakha, we distinguish between, we've talked about this a number of times before, in many places in Halakha, we distinguish between the borders of Eretz Yisrael and the borders of Eretz Yisrael. You have areas, you have areas that were originally conquered by the Jewish people at, when they came from Mitzrayim and entered Eretz Yisrael and during the times of Yeshua, and then afterwards to a lesser extent in the time of the Shoftim and then the Malachim and so forth. Eventually, they reached the maximum borders of Eretz Yisrael. You have by Shlomo HaMelech, for example, when he made the Chanukah Sabayis, the first Beis Hamikdash, it says that he invited all the Jews from Levoy Hamas until Nachal Mitzrayim, which are the extremes of Eretz Yisrael. Then you have the borders of Oileg Babel, the narrow area within Eretz Yisrael that the Oileg Babel settled in and took back over. It does include parts of Eber HaYarden as well. But on the other hand, it doesn't even include certain enclaves in Eretz Yisrael. For example, in Holon, we'll learn in a few months' time, Bez Hashem, that Beis Shan in Eretz Yisrael was not considered part of the borders of Oileg Babel. It's only part of the borders of Oileg Mitzrayim. So over here, when we're talking about...
It makes
a difference as far as the question whether the mitzvah saployis ba'aretz apply there or not. To a large extent, the mitzvah saployis ba'aretz apply more in the borders of Oileg Babel than they do in the borders of Oileg Mitzrayim. Because, again, the borders of Oileg Babel, once the land was conquered and taken over from them by Nebuchadnezzar, then it lost its kedusha. So therefore, what's supposed to give it back its kedusha then? When they came from Oileg Babel, they weren't mekadosh those areas again because they didn't live in them.
Right, and the kedusha therefore depends on whether or not they live in them.
Exactly. So therefore, those areas, Beis Shan,
Beis Shan.
That's very nice, but that we don't have the power to give it kedusha. There needs to be a bit of mikdash.
Just said because we abandoned some areas, didn't reconquer.
First of all, okay. Nowadays, at least Shmita, according to most of the poskim, is Dirabanan, because most of the Jewish people don't live in Eretz Yisrael. And I think that I'm not sure about the other mitzvahs of Poyis Baretz, although I believe that Amman Paskins are the same thing, that as long as most of the Jewish people are not living in Eretz Yisrael, which has been true ever since the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash, then it's not Daraisa. So therefore, again, so the borders of Oileg Mitzrayim, the expanded borders of Eretz Yisrael, to the extent that mitzvahs of Poyis Baretz apply in them, they apply less than they do in the borders of Oileg Babel. I don't remember all the specifics exactly, but there are.
So the West Bank is Oileg Mitzrayim.
So the West Bank, most of it is Oileg Babel. Most of it is Oileg Babel. Parts of it maybe not, but by and large it is. Parts of Eber HaYarden. You're asking about Eber HaYarden. Same thing. Parts of Eber HaYarden are in the borders of Oileg Babel. Parts not.
Oileg Babel and not Oileg Mitzrayim.
There isn't any. Oileg Babel is included within Eretz Yisrael, but you have many areas that are the other way around that are Oileg Mitzrayim, but not Oileg Babel.
That's what I'm asking.
Yes. So you have, for example, parts of the northern Galil, parts of southern Eretz Yisrael, yeah.
The Galil, they came back.
Yeah, but not necessarily all of it.
For example, I don't remember all the specifics,
but for example, you have there's an area near Akko, for example, that the Gemara mentioned in a few places that's not part of the borders of Oileg Babel. There's a strip of land over there near Akko that's outside the borders of Eretz Yisrael of Oileg Babel. All right, whatever, this isn't really the place to get into it, but yeah. Fine. All right. Oh, so who is the halacha like? I'm going to be holding on my shmuel. Halacha is Rabbi Yosi. The halacha is like Rabbi Yosi. That you can that again in Eretz Yisrael you can rent a goy a house. In Syria you can sell them a house or rent them a field. And in Chutz Laaretz you can sell them either one. Rabbi Yosef will eventually ask a shchuna. Rabbi Yosef says though, provided that you don't make a shchuna, a neighborhood out of it. But kama shchuna, how much is considered a neighborhood? Tana, we learn in a braisa, and shchuna pchusim shloisha bnei adam. Shchuna is not less than three people. So you have different understandings of what exactly this means to not make a shchuna. One explanation, which is the Rambam's explanation, is that it means this that we're saying in Eretz Yisrael, you're allowed to rent goyim houses, means provided that you don't rent to three goyim adjacent to each other, because then you're making a goyish neighborhood out of it, right? Some of the other Rishonim explain that it means even in Chutz Laaretz, when we're saying you're allowed to sell houses, but not if you're making a shchuna out of it. And in particular, we're talking about in a Jewish neighborhood, not to sell three houses adjacent to each other to goyim, because this became very relevant in the 60s with what happened to Crown Heights. Yeah, well, nowadays, where many houses were being sold to goyim and Jews were starting to leave the neighborhood.
We're saying Chutz Laaretz.
According to many of the Rishonim, we're talking in Chutz Laaretz as well. You're allowed to sell houses to a goy, but not if you're going to make a shchuna. Not if you're going to make a little goyish enclave within a Jewish neighborhood. Yeah. Okay. So the question is, so why should he be allowed if it's less than three? The lochosh duma ozel hay yisrael mazaben l'chadav et kachavim. So what? Why don't you have to be concerned that one Jew is going to go sell a house to one guy, which is we're saying is allowed, but also then you have his neighbor is not his neighbor. What if you have, let's say, so we're saying that you're not allowed to sell to three different goyim. But don't you have a problem that the yid may go and sell three houses to one guy?
Right.
The yid may sell three houses to one guy. But ozel heyach umazvin lalatrei. Then the guy is going to turn around and sell two of those houses to other goyim and keep one for himself. And presto, you have a shuna. So how is such a thing allowed? Abaya says, as we said earlier in the perek, alifnei makedinen. We do have a mitzvah of lifnei iver leisifin michshol, but alifnei delifnei leimakedinen. But not so far as we're going to say we're asking you to do something where then the other person may cause where it takes two steps where to
one
cause
no,
the answer that.
One yes, but two no.
Right. Now, Tosfos talks about how is it a lifnei iver anyway? I mean, is it also for a goy to be selling to be selling these houses to other goyim? So Tosfos has two answers. One is we don't literally mean, we're not talking about lifnei to lifnei. We just mean, in other words, we're not going that far in answering it. We're not literally talking about lifnei iver. Second of all, then Tosfos says that, on the other hand, the issur is you don't want that there shouldn't be hezek to Jews. So therefore, in that sense, we are talking about something that's also for a goy. A goy is also to cause harm to Jews, and therefore, if he were to sell, then it could lead to harm. So therefore, but that's what we're saying. It's lifnei to lifnei, and therefore, we're not worried about it. So therefore, the yid himself is allowed to do it. All he's doing is he's making it possible for this goy to then turn around and sell to other goyim and create a hezek. That kind of thing is not also.
That's a probable outcome, isn't it?
Not necessarily. The goy doesn't have to sell to other goyim. He could sell to other Jews. It's fine. He has three houses. He doesn't need all three of them. But there's no reason he has to dafka have his customers are going to be other goyim. All right. Okay, then we said in the Mishnah, we said in the Mishnah, even in places where you're allowed to rent buildings to goyim, we said you're not allowed to do it for a place for them to live because they will bring getchkes in there. So, the implication is that there are places where you're not allowed to rent houses to goyim at all. Therefore, therefore, that part of the Mishnah must be a Stam Mishnah that is like Rav Meir, who said that in Eretz Yisrael you're not allowed to rent them buildings at all. Because according to Rav Yossi, there is no such place that you're not allowed to rent. He says even in Eretz Yisrael you're allowed to rent them houses.
Even in Yerushalayim,
he doesn't say Yerushalayim, he says Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, all we've established, in other words, is that Mishnah goes according to the mayor. Nevertheless, though, as we said before, the halacha is like Rabbi Yosi. We said of a chomokam lo yiska.
Hold
it. So the halacha is like Rabbi Yosi. Even in Israel, you're allowed to rent a goyim. Again, in principle, as long as you're not using it for a house, so we're bringing up a desara. And again, you have the various hetarim that we talked about, whether you're allowed to nowadays, where they don't typically bring up a desara into their houses. Then we said of a chomakam lo yiskachol. We said that in any place, in Eretz Yisrael or outside of it, you're not allowed to rent a goy a bathhouse, because we said in the Mishnah that mitneshu nikra al shmoy, because it's called by the name of the Jewish owner. And then the problem is it's going to be used on Shabbos, and people are going to think that this bathhouse is being used under the yid's name on Shabbos. So let's analyze that a bit. Tanya, we learn in a b'risa. Reb Shimon Gam Liyolomer, lo yisko adam merchotze lo ovid gechavim. A person is not allowed to rent his bathhouse to a goy. Mipnei shenikra al shmei, because it's called after his name, like we said in the Mishnah. And the problem is, lo ovid gechavim zeh oisa bei melacha b'shabbosus over Yom Tov. The problem is now the goy is going to do melacha in it, heating up the water and whatever, on Shabbos and Yom Tov, and that would be a problem. The poskim do talk about, by the way, we're talking about, relatively speaking, a short-term lease. If you have, like, you rented to him for 20 years or something, that's not as much of an issue, because by the end of that time, it doesn't matter specifically 20 years, but whatever, a significant period of time, where already then nobody thinks of it as this Jew's bathhouse anymore. But here we're talking about a short-term lease.
No, not necessarily. You ask someone here, they know, oh, you know what?
Maybe not 20 years. They don't say a specific number, but whatever it is. Yeah, there are such things. Okay, fine. So the question is, since Reb Shimon Gamliel is mentioning specifically renting it to a goy, an oved gechavim, a full-fledged goy, so does that imply avol kusi mai shori? So what are you telling me then? That means if you were to rent it to a kusi, that would be allowed? The problem is, Kusi, Ema, Ovid, Be, Melacha, V'chol, Shomayid. Isn't there the problem, though, that you have to consider that the goy is going, that not the goy, the kusi, is going to do malacha in an achalamoyed, where we have various restrictions on malacha and achalamoyed, but we learn that
on Shabbos.
The kusim keep, right, we talked the other day, kusim keep the mitzvahs that it says in Torah Shabbat. In fact, the Gemara talks about elsewhere that some of them they keep even more carefully than we do.
Right.
But so Shabbat, but that's the point. Shachalamoyed is not explicitly in so many words in the Pasuk. The Pasuk just says, for example, about Pesach, that the first day and the seventh day are Yomtiv, Kol Melachas Avodah L'Sasu. It doesn't explicitly say about the days in between. We learn it from a drasha about the fact, the whole concept that there's an issur of malacha on chalamoyed, and it's left up to the chachamim to determine the exact parameters. This is, by the way, a classic example. Some of the poshim say there are a number of such cases, but pretty much everybody agrees that chalamoyed is like this, where you have the basic concept that to not do malacha during on chalamoyed is zeraisa, but the specifics are all established by the chachamim, when it's allowed, when it's not allowed. Usually we have something that's either Zaraisa or it's Rabbanan, nothing in between. But here we have an example where the basic concept is Zaraisa, but the Torah left it up to the Chachamim to determine what is and what isn't allowed, which is the subject of Masechta Ma'id Kot. Anyway, so the question is now, Kusi, therefore, it doesn't believe in Chalamoyed on the face of it. Therefore, he's going to do Malacha and Chalamoyed. Don't you have a problem? The answer is, so what? And so what? We're allowed to bathe in bathhouses and heat them up and whatever on Chalamoyed. So therefore, it's not an issue. Now,
you can't do all the malachas. You can't do all the malachas. You're allowed to do the malachas that are involved in running a bathhouse on Chalamoyed. So it's not even an issue.
The fact is, I mean, there are various things of personal grooming that you're not allowed to do Chalamoyed, cutting your hair, cutting your nails, etc. But those are because you could have done it washing your clothes, because those you could have done before Yom Tov. You shouldn't be coming into Yom Tov looking unattractive, looking overgrown and whatever, and figure, you know what, I'll have spare time during Chol HaMoed, I'll do it then. But bathing, people bathe regularly enough anyway, so therefore there's no issur on it during Chol HaMoed. And actually, then, of course, the question is, in that case, what was the Gemara thinking to ask? Of course, if we were allowed to bathe and run bathhouses on Chol HaMoed, why did the Gemara even have to ask? So there's a different girsa over here, that instead of Amar, that Amas, which means when, in which case, it's not a question and answer, that avalakusi, well, it is a question and answer, but the question and answer is different. Avalakusi mai, the question would be, according to what Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying, what about would you be allowed to rent the bathhouse to a kusi? And the answer is, shari, it's allowed, because kusi emas ovid be malacha, because when is the kusi going to do malacha with it, on it? Not on Shabbos, not on Yom Tov, only b'chol HaShomayit, and that's no problem, because b'chol HaShomayit on Nanami Avdinim. So it's a different way of understanding the question and answer, of punctuating the Gemara and understanding the question and answer. Okay, fine. So far so good. So you're not allowed to rent your bathhouse to a goy because he's going to do malacha on and on Shabbos and Yom Tov, but you're allowed to rent it to a kusi because he won't. Okay. What about avos sadeu la'ovid kachavim mai? What about would you be allowed to rent your field to a goy? What would that be allowed, or are we concerned? Now, let's say, for example, we're talking in Chutz La'aretz, where, as we said in the Mishnah, you're allowed to rent or even sell them fields, but would you be allowed to, considering that it's called by your name? The answer is shari, it's allowed.
My time, arisa al-sufi ka'avit, because when you rent a field to a person, typically the arrangement is that you have him as an oris.
He's a sharecropper, where he gives you a certain percentage of the crop, and he keeps a certain percentage for himself. So therefore, in other words, he's not really doing it as your shliach. He's doing it for his own benefit.
Because the better he works the field, the more he's going to get out of it. So therefore, people are not going to say, look at that, you have this Jew is having malacha done his work on Shabbat. People are going to say, the goy is doing it for his own benefit. Okay, so the question is, then why don't you apply the same logic to a bathhouse? The answer is, I reached the benefits, like, I'll be interested, because people don't make an arrangement like that with a bathhouse. You operate the bathhouse and you'll get X percent of the proceeds. People don't.
Usually when you rent out a bathhouse, it's an all or nothing deal. You manage the place and you'll keep all the proceeds for as long as you're running it. Which, in fact, the post can say on that, it's not strictly speaking a difference between a field and a bathhouse. It's rather whatever is typically done under an arisus agreement versus not. If you have a place where a bathhouse is run under an arisus agreement, then you might be allowed to. If you have places where field, as long as it's a common practice. Tosfos also gets into a long discussion over here about the question. Based on that, then, let's say, would you be allowed to hire a goyish contractor to build a house for you on Shabbos, and he should be allowed to work on it on Shabbos? So Tosfos argues on the face, argues, and Tosfos on the face of it, yes, because after all, the goy wants to finish the contract as fast as possible so he can go do something else. So you have the same kind of logic. He's not doing it as your shliach. He's doing it for his own benefit. That's what Rabbeinu Tam argues in Tosfos. Plus Rabbeinu Tam brings a couple of other proofs for it. However, then Tosfos brings that the Ri disagreed with that. He disproved all of Rabbeinu Tam's proofs and said that no, you're not allowed to. You're not allowed to have because when you rent when you hire contractors to build a house or to do whatever, to do construction work or whatever, sometimes you can hire contractors, sure, but sometimes you could equally well be hiring people by the day. And that would be also for them to do on Shabbos, because then they're definitely doing it as your shluchim. So therefore, it's not necessarily going to be obvious the difference that this one is doing it as a contractor rather than not.
Would it also be Zilza Shabbos? Would that be a
shluchim? I mean, well, that's what we're saying. In other words, that people are going to see that Malacha is being done over here, and they're going to think that the Jew is having it done on that.
No, I don't mean that. I mean disturbing the atmosphere of Shabbos.
Oh, so, okay. Well, no. Not really any different than the way that goyim can do their own malacha on Shabbos, and you know, we don't ask the goyim to drive cars on the street on Shabbos because, you know, but there is actually a distinction that's brought in halacha with some of these things. There is a distinction whether it's in town or outside of it. Outside of town, there's more reason to be makel, because then you don't have people passing by who are going to see the work being done and call it by the name of the year. But here we're talking about in town. And in fact, by the way, Tosfos goes on to say that Rabbeinu Tam, one time when he was having a house built for himself, so he hired a contractor. And indeed, even though he himself held, as we said before, that you're allowed to have the contractor work on Shabbos, nevertheless, Rabbeinu Tam, in practice, was machmer on himself and followed the Ri's opinion and told the goy not to do work on the house on Shabbos. Okay.
Now we learn in a brayso, another opinion, Rav Shimon Elazar, and the Yafka Adam Sadeh LeKutzi. A person should not rent his field to a Kutzi, because again it's called by his name,
and people are going to think that Malacha is being done in illegally. And the problem is, the Kutzi is always by Malacha B'chol HaShamayit. The problem is, again, the Kutzi is going to do Malacha on it on Chol HaMoed, because as we said before, the Kutzim don't necessarily believe if they don't hold by Chol HaMoed. Exactly right. So that would be a problem, because most kinds of field work are also on Chol HaMoed, unless it's a Dover or Ovid or something, unless it's something where there's going to be a major financial loss. Yeah. So the question...
Dress differently?
No, I don't know if they dress differently, but whatever. The point still remains that people are going to see that Malacha is being done in this field, and they're going to... So the question is, Aval Ovid to Chavim Mai Shari? So what are you telling me then? In that case, the fact that Rav Shimon Elazar is specifically mentioning a kusi as opposed to Rav Shimon Gamliel before, who mentioned a goy, implies that it seems that Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying that a kusi you're not allowed to, but a goy you would. What's the logic? Bepashtus, because like we said before, Damri Arisa Arisuse Ovid, because people will figure he's a sharecropper, he's doing it for his own personal benefit rather than for the sake of the Jew.
If
it's a goy. The question is, Yehochi Kusinami Amri Arisa Arisuse Ovid, then why should it be any different with a kusi?
That's the question. In other words, if you're saying you're allowed to have a goy be an artist for you, yeah, and you're not worried that people are going to say, look at this
Jew is having workers work his field on Shabbos because they're going to realize the goy is doing it for his own benefit, so why would it be any different with the kusi? Yes, okay, he doesn't do malacha on Shabbos. So fine, Chol HaMoed, when the kusi does malacha on Chol HaMoed, what's the problem? People are going to know he's an artist because fields are commonly leased out to artisans. Was that what you were asking? Or what
were you going to ask? Kusi and Koshi can over to the
Okay. Oh, you're saying what? Maybe he's saying Kusi and right. Okay. Tosfos brings up that point, but still, the fact is that since Rav Shimon Gamliel mentioned a goy, mentioned an Ovid Kachavim, and Rav Shimon Elazar changes that and mentions a Kusi, and each one could have used the other one. Rav Shimon Gamliel could have mentioned a Kusi, which we said he didn't have to. Rav Shimon Elazar could have mentioned a goy. The fact that each one used a different thing, it implies that each one is talking about their exact case. One is talking about a goy and not a kusi, and the other one is talking about a kusi and not a goy.
The answer is that Rav Shimon Elazar would
say that no, you're not allowed to have an orist in your field. He would say that he would say, we don't accept this idea that the Oris can be doing work in your field on Shabbos or on Chol HaMoed, and it's okay because people know that he's an Oris and they're not going to attribute it to you. No, Reb Shimon Elazar says, I don't hold with that concept. Well, the question is, my time and mutter. So then, according to Reb Shimon Elazar, why are you allowed to have a goy working in your field but not a kusi? The reason is, Damrin and Levit Sais. The reason is because if you have a goy as your artist and you tell him not to do work in your field on Shabbos, he'll listen to you. So therefore, that's it. As opposed to the Gemara is going to say, of course he won't. The Gemara is going to say in a second, yeah. So
Rav Shimon Elazar would say, it's not that you're allowed to rent your field by with an Arisus agreement to a goy, and he can be doing work in there on Shabbos, and no problem because everybody knows he's an artist. No, there is a problem with him doing the law there on Shabbos. All it is
you'll have to tell him before Shabbos, don't do work in it on Shabbos.
You have control over it.
You have control over it.
Yeah. With a kusi, you don't.
The question is, kusi nami amin and levitzayas, so won't it be the same thing with the kusi if you tell him not to do work on Chol HaMoed?
Right.
The answer is kusi loitzayas, because the kusi will not listen, he won't pay attention to you, to Omar, because he will say, look, I'm as much a Jew as you are. I'm no gemunit feminach. He will say, well, I know my way around the Torah as well. They had their version of the Torah as well. I know my way around the Torah. I know that there's no such thing as not working on Chol HaMoed. It doesn't matter. The kusi will say, why are you telling me to give up some of my potential profits where I stand to get 25 or 33 or whatever it is percent of the, or more, or whatever, of the produce over here, and you're telling me not to work on Chol HaMoed. I don't hold there's any such concept. As opposed to a guy, he doesn't have a guy. He's going to know. Look, he doesn't have a Torah. He doesn't know what Shabbos is and isn't. If you tell him not to work a certain day, then fine. You know, it's your religion. Fine. Okay. So the question is, Yehochi my Yuriyim Pnishin Nikras Oshmoy. In that case, if we're worried about the Kusi is going to do Malacha on an Chol HaMoed, then why is Reb Shimon Elazar mentioning the point that the field is called by the Yid's name, and therefore people are going to think that it's illegally being worked by the Yid, or rather by his agent, whatever, that's illegally being worked by the Yid's agent on Chol HaMoed? Typically, Mishum Lifnei Ivril sits in Mikshel. You have a better reason. If we're saying that a Kusi is considered a Jew to that extent, and you have the famous machloikas in many places in Shas, whether the kusim are gay, we talked about it the other day, whether kusim are gayre emes or gayre arayas, were they sincere gayrim at some point, or were they never? They only became gayrim because they were being attacked by the lions, and they never sincerely became gayrim. Reb Shimon Elazar, Tosfos points out, holds, there's a sugya about it at the beginning of Cholin. Reb Shimon Elazar is one of the opinions who holds that they are gayre emes. And we just established that according to him, therefore the kusi may very well say, I know the Torah better than you do, and I know there's no such thing about Chol HaMoed. So in that case, why are we mentioning the fact that it's called by your name and people are going to think the kusi is doing it as your agent? You have a better reason, Lifnei Iver. You're not allowed to cause that another yid is going to do an avera, and for that purpose, to that extent, he's considered a yid.
But it's not avera in Chol HaMoed.
But it is. It's an Isser Daraisa to do Malacha on Chol HaMoed. The specifics of what Malachas are also in Mutter is left up to the Chachamim. But the actual Isser is Daraisa. And therefore, if you're making him your Oris, and he's going to go ahead and do work on Chol HaMoed because he's not going to respect you enough to tell that when you tell him not to, then you're doing with neighbors. The answer is Chodah v'Oid Karma. You're right. Reb Shimon Elazar is saying there are two considerations. Chodah Mishum Lifnei Iver v'Oid Mifnei Nikras Ashmai. Number one is Lifnei Iver, and number two is because it's called by his name. Now, the obvious question is, in that case, why is Reb Shimon Elazar using the secondary reason of Chashad, that's called by your name, that people are going to suspect you, when Lifnei Iver is a much more important point? So the Ritva says that actually, the Ritva learned our Gemara to say that even among the Kusim, many of them did keep Chol HaMoed. Even though we're saying that it's only a drasha of a Chachamim, etc., nevertheless, many of the Kusim did keep it. This particular one, you don't know. He might be one of the minority, he might not. So you can't, strictly speaking, say that it's Lifnei Iver. But there is the problem of Chashad, if it turns out that he is one of the ones who doesn't keep it, and then people see him working over there and think he's doing it at your instruction.
You don't.
But that's why Reb Shimon Elazar didn't mention the Lifnei Iver, because there isn't necessarily Lifnei Iver involved.
Sometimes, yes.
But if he also is going according to the opinion that says they're not gay.
That's the point. Tosfos points out, Reb Shimon Elazar is one of the ones who holds that they're gay. If we were talking according to the other opinions, whether they're according to the mayor or whoever it is who says that not, then there wouldn't be anything to talk about. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara tells a case. Hanhu Morikoi, do with these people who planted saffron. That was their job. Saffron is a flower that produces a very expensive spice. It's used in cooking. It gives food a yellowish color or whatever. They use it a lot in Indian cooking. Anyway, so there was these people that was their job, to take care of saffron, of gardens of saffron plants. The Ode to Chazim Nokit B'Shab. So now what used to happen was you had a Jew and a Goy in partnership together doing this job. The Goy would do the malacha, all the various malachas, the flowering, planting, and so forth, on Shabbos. The Yisrael B'Chad B'Shab. So then in return, the Jew would be doing the malacha on Sunday. And then the rest of the week, I guess they would do it together. Yeah. Also the Kamei de Rabba. So they came to Rabba to ask if they're allowed to have such an arrangement. Sharalahu, and Rabba said it's allowed. Eisvei Ravina l'Rava. So then Ravina asks Rava, how can you say that? A Braita said, Yisrova of Tchavim Shekiblu Soda B'Shutfus. If a Jew and a Goy are Makabal, a field in partnership, Makabal is similar to Oris, except with the difference that an Oris, the difference is that an Oris, we said, there's a certain percentage. A Makabal is typically that there's a certain fixed amount. There's a certain fixed amount.
Ownership or shared ownership?
No. We're talking about that they're working it as hired workers. But the difference is, an Oris is he gets a certain percentage. Wow. The owner of the field gets 25 or 33 or whatever the arrangement percent or whatever the arrangement is. A Makabal is usually there's a fixed amount. He owes a certain fixed amount of grain or whatever it is to the owner, and the rest he keeps. And in Bava Metzia, they have a whole. Right, so that's in Bava Metzia, there's a whole parak over there, half of a parak over there, the ninth parak, that talks about the details where you have certain dinim that apply to one and not the other. Okay, so in this case, so they were makabel, they were sharecroppers in a field in partnership. The Jew is not allowed to say to the Goy, "You take your portion for Shabbos, and I will take an equivalent portion from the weekday," because then it comes out that the Goy is doing malacha as your shliach. If you're saying you do the malacha on Shabbos, yeah, and in return and you will take your portion because of that,
right,
and I'll take some other portion for the days of the week, then for the other day of the week, then it comes out that he's doing it as your shliach, and that would be also. The im hisnu mitchila mutter. However, if they made a condition to begin with, then it would be mutter, because then the Jew never accepted on himself in the first place that he's going to work a condition exactly like that. But the point is, the difference is, if they started working, then it amounts to, when they start working, if they're makabel without making any such conditions, it comes out each of them is responsible to do malacha in the field every day. So now, halfway through the week, the Yid wakes up and realizes, hey, wait a minute, what am I going to do on Shabbos? Okay, you cover for me on Shabbos, and I'll instead cover for you on Sunday or whatever. Then that's the problem. Then he's doing it as your shliach.
Right.
But if to begin with, before they ever agreed to take the job, the Jew says to the guy, look, I can't work on Shabbos, therefore we're arranging in the first place. I'm not responsible for Shabbos at all. You're not responsible, let's say, for some other day of the week, so then he's not doing it as a shliach. So that would be allowed. Bimbo l'cheshbon oser. But if they come to calculate it out, then it would be also. What do we mean by calculate it out? So Rashi explains that it means like this. We're not talking about where they made a tnai to begin with. They didn't make any condition. They started doing it stam. They started doing it stam without any preconditions. Obviously, then the Jew didn't do malacha on Shabbos. Instead, the Goy started doing malacha on Shabbos without the Jew telling him anything, because the Goy himself realized, you know what, my partner, the Jew, isn't showing up to work today. I guess I'll do the work today. Later on, they come to figure out, well, okay, how many days of Shabbos did you work? And I'll take some corresponding amount from that you can't do. Bimbo l'cheshbon oser. Then such a thing would be oser. So you have three different cases, in other words, in this price. So one is where it's stam, that you can't say after the fact, you take a portion for Shabbos and I'll take a portion for weekday. Two is they're allowed to make such a tonight to begin with. But it's not an avera for a goy to do malacha on Shabbos. That is true. So exactly, he can't be your shliach. He can't be doing it because you told him to. So you can do that to begin with, where you're saying, I'm not going to be able to work
can
on
you hint it to him?
You could, but that's not what that's not we're talking about. You're allowed to make a condition to begin with. I'm not going to be here on Shabbos. Therefore, whatever work you do on Shabbos, you're entitled to some percentage because of that. I, in turn, will do malacha some other day of the week, and I'll take a percentage for that, and the rest will split
equally. Can you tell him, keep everything you do on Shabbos?
It's a field. It's, you can't quantify how much he does on Shabbos versus the rest of the week. In fact, Tosfos makes that point. Tosfos brings a case where a Jew was owed money by a goy. He collected an oven to pay off the debt. Meanwhile, he had that the deal was that the Jew is going to have a certain percentage of the proceeds from the bread or whatever baked in the oven. The baker, the goy, is going to have such and such. They didn't make any tnai. So what do we do as far as splitting the proceeds? So Tosfos mentions, the Ri says that an oven is different because whatever's done in it on weekdays, and whatever's done in it on Shabbos is completely disjoint than what's done with it on the other days of the week. As opposed to a field, the goy is doing malacha on it on Shabbos, and that benefits the Jew's portion as well. You can't separate out and say this part was done on Shabbos and this part was done on Sunday, etc.
For another, you can not refuse.
Right. No. Tosfos then goes on, so therefore it would be allowed.
So that,
one second. So therefore, so Tosfos says that they would be allowed. Fine, the goy can keep his. No, in the case of the oven, the Ri says in Tosfos that then with an oven, such an arrangement would be mutter, even if they didn't make a tnai to begin with. On the other hand, then Tosfos goes on to say that no, Rabbeinu Achanan says that no, because the whole oven belongs to a Jew, so it would be the equivalent of renting out your oven and then to a goy and telling him that he can he's allowed to use it on Shabbos. You can't really do that. And in fact, Tosfos says that the Ri changed his mind also and realized that such a thing is also after all. Okay, but anyway, returning to the field, the point is, so again, we have three scenarios. One where you didn't make any tonight, two where you did, and three where, again, you didn't make any tnai, and now you're going and figuring out, well, how many Shabbosim did you work versus how many days did I work and how many did we work together? So that would be awesome. The only way would be to make a tnai. Anyway, the point is, therefore, that again, with the case of these people who are planting and taking care of the saffron plants, you have the goy was doing the malacha on Shabbos, the Jew was doing it on Sunday. Rava is saying that it's no problem. What we see from this braisa, it is a problem unless they made it tonight. So ichsif. So Rava was embarrassed that he'd forgotten that he didn't know that braisa.
Looks like in the end, the grime milk to get his tuna ikrav. Eventually, it turned out that Rava was right after all because they had made a condition, they had made a tnai in the first place. So Rava didn't realize it at the time, but we had
such stories in Bava Metzia as well a few times where there's a famous thing that it says that a Rav, when he paskins, has siyata d'shmaya, special help from Hashem to arrive at the correct halacha. And we have several examples of this with Rava where he ended up arriving at the correct halacha even though he didn't have all the facts at the time.
It's as if he had not practiced incorrectly.
No, but that's the thing. In the end, it turned out he had practiced incorrectly. Because that's the point. In other words, because
he had to try it, exactly.
Yeah. Which is the same as saying that at the time that he made the decision, he didn't make the right decision.
Okay, but nevertheless, it turned out it was the right decision. It turns out it was the right decision. It turns out that Hashem gave him the help to come to the right decision. Now
there is a machloika, what the actual halacha is over here. You're mentioning, Eliyahu, about the goy taking 1/7, and that's actually what the Rambam says, that if no tnai was made to begin with, then you have to give the goy 1/7 of the proceeds, and then that's it. Whatever everything else, then you can split it.
Right, yeah.
Okay. Rav Gvia Mibeik Sil, Omar. Now, Rav Gvia Mibeik Sil says, no, that's not actually what happened. The way you're telling the story that it was involving people who were planting saffron plants and there was a problem, the problem was as far as Shabbos, that's not what the actual case was. Hanush Sila de Orla, however.
The problem, rather, wasn't Shabbos, the problem was Orla. You had not the saffron plants, because Orla didn't apply to plants, it applied to trees, but it was a case of a Jew and a guy who were planting trees. Again, they had
a partnership between them to plant trees in a field and take care of them and eventually split them and eventually split the fruit of the trees with the owner. And of course, the first 3 years, the fruit of the tree is also because it's Arla.
Now, what happened was then the goy was using the produce of the years of the Arla, the first 3 years,
and the yid was in turn then taking an equivalent amount of the next 3 years' fruit. So they would figure it. They were figuring it out. Let's say figuring out you the guy ended up with $1,000 worth of fruit over those 3 years. So therefore, I'm entitled now to $1,000 of the fruit over the next 3 years. And after and eventually after that we'll split. After that we'll split it 50-50. I'm giving an example.
Okay. So that was the case. Also, the came the Rava Sharavu, and they came to Rava, and Rava said it's mutter, because after all,
so Rashi learns it's mutter because what's the problem? After all, there's no issur on working on working on trees of Orla. The issur is only you're not allowed to eat the fruit, you're not allowed to have anah from the fruit. Unlike with Shabbos, where there would be an issur taking care of the trees in the first place, with Orla there's no such problem. It's just you're not allowed to eat the fruit, so therefore there's no problem. So that's sort of the Gavir Mibay Kasil's version of how the story went. Okay.
So the question is, okay, didn't we just have that Ravina asked the question to Rava? So according to Gavir's version, why is he asking him a question?
Why is he asking him a question? Of course, there's a difference between Shabbos and Orla. The answer is on the contrary. According to Rav Gvir's version, Ravina did not bring up that braisa to question Rava, but rather on the contrary, in order to support what Rava is saying. We see that even with Shabbos, if they make a tnai to begin with, it's allowed. Therefore, when there's no problem of shlichus, which is true when you make a tnai to begin with, because then it's agreed to begin with that the goy is going to be doing malacha on his own on Shabbos, then it's allowed. Orla, there's no issue of shlichus, so therefore it's allowed. Okay, the question is about Ichsif, but we just said before in the story that Rava was embarrassed until he found out the full facts. The answer is Rav Gvir would say, why should he be embarrassed if Ravina is bringing him a proof? The answer is, according to Rav Gvir's version, that didn't happen. It didn't happen that Rava got it. We're telling the Gemara, it didn't happen that he got embarrassed. We had a version of the story that he was, but no. Okay. Iboilo, some of my, so now we have a question, what happened though? What happened to the stuff? What happened to the stuff? So Rashi learns that we're talking about again with that we're going back to Shabbos now again, where they didn't make any preconditions about Shabbos versus Sunday versus whatever. So the goy did the work on Shabbos, the Jew did the work on Sunday. The Jew never explicitly told the goy, you work on Shabbos and I'll work on a weekday. Are we allowed? Well, the question is, when it comes to dividing up the proceeds, are we allowed to divide it up 50-50 without explicitly mentioning before? We said you can't if we're boel cheshbon, if we're saying that you take all the ones of Shabbos and I'll take an equivalent amount from Sunday. We said that's awkward. But here we're saying, if we don't mention Shabbos at all, what would be the deal?
He was still shliach, though, no?
Nobody said anything to anybody.
But not all, because they're 50-50. But
if he had mentioned Shabbos.
If he had mentioned Shabbos, then it would be a problem because the goy is doing malacha for him on Shabbos. But if they never mention anything, and now when they're coming to split it up, they're also not mentioning anything, what would be the din then? Can it be 50-50, or do we have to forego the proceeds of Shabbos? The answer is Toshmaim, Hisnu Mitchila Mutter. Fine. Well, let's see. The Brai said that if they made a tonight to begin with, then it's Mutter, implying Hastama also, implying, but if it was Stam without any condition, then even when they're dividing it, they don't mention Shabbos, it would be also.
Right.
On the other hand, the Gemara says, Ema Sefer, yes, but look at the next part of the Braisa, Imbol Cheshbon also. We said only if they make an explicit Cheshbon and they mention that you take an amount for Shabbos and I'll take a corresponding amount for Sunday, it would be also. Ha Stama Mutter, implying, but if no such thing about Shabbos versus Sunday was mentioned, it would be Mutter. So you don't have proof. Elam Ahalek, Elam Mishmamina. So the bottom line is there's no way of proving from this Braisa one way or the other. So you have some of the Rishonim say, in that case, we can be Makel on it. On the other hand, the Rambam holds, and this is how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, to be Machmer on it, that if it was Stam, then we do have to say that you have to forego 1/7 of the profits for the Goy to account for the Shabbos profits, and the rest you can split equally.
Right, because if you're saying that they both have an equal responsibility every day, so really he did have a responsibility, so he just didn't show up.
I guess that's why the Rambam learns it that way, right. And by the way, as far as the thing of Orla also, the Rambam says it's not so simple. This that Rashi is saying that you're allowed to work on trees of Orla,
the Rambam says, granted, yes, you're allowed to work on trees of Orla. On the other hand, since fruit of Orla is also Bahana, you're not allowed to make business deals with it either. You're not allowed to say, you take the fruit of Orla for X number of years, and corresponding to that, I'll take the fruit of Orla for the fruit of non-Orla for X number of years. So therefore, again, the only way would be if to begin with they made a tonight where the fruit of Orla was never going to be in the Jews' hands in the first place, then that only then would it be Mutter. Similar to the Shabbos thing, in other words. Hadron alach lifnei adin.
These halachas, by the way, as far as Shabbos, are quite complicated.
That deal with all these details about having a goy work and about hiring a goy to do malacha for you, where it's going to be done on Shabbos and what you're allowed and not allowed to tell him, and just for Reish Mem Gimel alone, there's a long madura basra, there's a long lumdisha thing that the Alter Rebbe has in Shulchan Aruch, like a long kundra sacharin that deals with all the ins and outs of it. So it's far from simple.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Mishnah says. So now, this second paragraph. So in the first paragraph, we were talking about various business deals that you're not allowed to do with the goyim. Some of them because of Avodah Zarah, and some of them because of other considerations such as Shabbos or Chanoi Vakarta. So now we're continuing somewhat on that topic, not business deals, but other interpersonal things that we're not allowed to do with goyim, either because some of them because of the znus. Some of them because of problems of personal safety, shvichus damim. Some of them for other reasons. That's going to be the first half of the perek, and then the second half of the perek then goes on to talk about various foods and other things of goyim that were allowed and not allowed to eat. They were going to have bishalakum, pasakum, and the rest of that discussion. Mishnah starts off. Ein ma midin behemah from the koyz shal over the kachavim. We are not allowed to stand to stable an animal in an inn that belongs to a goy. Because Goy is a subject of Rabia, committing bestiality with the animal. And that's also to them. One of the six alayas that are also to the name Noyah is animals, and then they all again be with them. And they have seven mitzvahs, but they have within one of those mitzvahs. Gilead Ayas is six types of close relatives or other such things that they're not allowed to have relations with, and then Behemoth is one. And also a person shouldn't be alone with a goy, because they're suspect of bloodshed. A Jew and a goy are alone together, the goy may kill the Jew.
Not absolute.
Okay, so one second. This that we're saying about the animals is not necessarily so absolute either. The fact is, again, I mean, nowadays we don't really hear much of it because most Jews don't own animals, but in the old days, it was a very common thing. You take your animal to an inn and you stable it there. How do you do that? So Tosfos discusses that later on, the Gemara is going to discuss that maybe our Mishnah goes only according to Rabbi Eliezer. Maybe the Halacha, therefore, is not like him. Maybe the Halacha is not like this Mishnah at all. Most of the other Rishonim don't accept that point, but they say, again, we live in a different type of society. We live in societies where bestiality is illegal and severely punished, and therefore there's less reason to be concerned that the Goyim would do it. Same thing with Shvichas Damim. Later on in the parak, we're going to talk about that an Odom Choshev is different because the Goyim would be afraid to harm him. And to that extent, Jews are considered Odom Choshev nowadays because, again, we live in places where there's a functioning legal system, and if a Goy kills a Jew, then he's going to be in big trouble. So therefore, there's much less of an issue with that. But the Gemara says, Uramini, I have a contradiction. You're telling me that Goyim are suspect on bestiality. But we learn in a braisa, loichin mehen behemel korban. We're allowed to buy animals from goyim to use for korbanos. Ve'en choshin l'nishim reveya v'l'nishim nirva. We're not concerned that the animal was used as the active or the passive partner in reveya, because those things would be possible for korbanos. We have Rashi mentions we have different limudim from Pesukim at the beginning of Vayikra that learn that a reveya or a nirva is possible for a korban. We're also not concerned that this animal may have been set aside to be used as a korban for Avodah Zarah, which wouldn't make it also for a Jew to use it just to use for food, but would make it also to be used as a korban. We're also not concerned that the goy may have worshipped the animal itself. Again, we'll learn later on in the Masechta that if a goy worships an animal, in and of itself, it doesn't become also unless he actually changed something in the animal. But there has to be human involvement in changing the appearance or something of something to make it osur as of a desara. Yeah, whatever. But again, as a korban, it would be osur. So when you were allowed to buy animals from goyim without having problems of any of these four things.
Anything.
Again, we're saying even for korbanos, how much more so you'd be allowed to buy them and shech them. So what are you telling me that goyim are choshed on revia if you're saying that if an animal that was revia or nirba would be kosher for a korban, and yet we're saying you're allowed to buy them from goyim? So obviously goyim are not suspect of such things. So bishleim and muktzah and nevad. So let's start with the last two. I can understand why we're not worried about muktzah and nevad which definitely are things that Goyim could be suspect on, that they'll designate the animal as a korban or that they'll worship it itself. Fine, that's not a problem, because im ista de aktsiye v'im ista de palche, because if the Goy had designated the animal as a korban for his getchke, or de aktsiye m'loshen mochze, if he had set it aside, yeah. V'im ista de palche, or if he had worshipped it, or if he had worshipped it as an avodah zarah, if I have a mazim, then fine, he wouldn't sell it. The very fact that he's selling it shows that he did never use it as muktzah or as neban, because otherwise, because then what's he doing? What's he doing selling? Or he was mevatel. It's okay, yeah. No, not necessarily, because bittul requires, we'll see later on in the Masechta, bittul requires some change to the actual object. Well, at least in the case of Nevad, in the case of an idol, for example, if a goy sells his idol, there has to be breaks it or dents it or whatever in order for it to be a valid bittul. Okay. Ela Reveya v'nir balachush, but based on our Mishnah, why are we not concerned about Reveya and Nirva, if we're saying that goyim are suspects on such things? The answer is Amar of Techlifa, Amar of Shilabar Avinim, Shmeidir Rav, Ovid Gechavim, Chosal Behemda, Shlai Taker. Very simple. A goy, yes, they may be choshered on Revia, but on the other hand, they're concerned about they're concerned about their animals. They don't want to use a female animal and be Reveya because it'll make it infertile. So therefore, they're not going to do it. So when you have a Jew brings his animal to a goyish stable, it's not theirs. They have no reason to stay away from it. But when it comes to their own animals, then money talks, and therefore they'd rather not. Okay, so the question is, Atenach Nekevis. Fine, that explains the case of a female animal. They have to be concerned about its fertility. Tenach is good, then, that we can understand Nekevis. What about if the animal is a Zohar? Where, if the goy were to commit bestiality with the Zohar, it would also become fossil, and there's no problem making it infertile. So why would the goy not do that? Why shouldn't we be concerned the goy would do that? The answer is Amar of Kahana Hoylamak Kishin Babasa. Fine, it won't cause them to become infertile, but it will make that the flesh will be leaner. The animal won't gain weight as well. It'll cause it some kind of harm again. So therefore, the same kind of thing. So therefore, the same kind of thing. Therefore, we have no reason to be concerned that a goy is going to do it with an animal that belongs to him. Okay, fine. The question is then, Eloha the Tanya Loichin Behemah Meroya Shalahan. What about, though, we also learn in a Braisa that you're allowed to buy animals for korbanos from a goyish shepherd?
Right. No,
we don't suspect. That's the point. So the question, well, that's the question. Why not? Loichosh Doma Rabala Roya. Why don't we have to be concerned that the Roya Shalahan? Why aren't we concerned that the Roya may commit bestiality with it? Because it's not his animal. Again, if we're establishing that when it's not his animal, then he's not worried about what's going to happen to it. So he might hear it. The answer is, yes, but he has to be concerned that he might lose his wages. If the guy who gave it to him to watch finds out that he did such things with it, and therefore it's going to have effects on the animal's fertility or on the animal's health or whatever, then yeah, he's going to be fired. He's going to lose his wages. So therefore he wouldn't do it. Okay. On the other hand, Ela Hadatanya Ein Moistrin Behemah L'Roya Shalahan. What about though that we say also in a Braisa that we are not allowed to give one of our animals to a goyish shepherd to watch? Well, why not? Same logic. Roya Shalahan Misyarim Shem Hefset Tzchare. Again, don't you have the same logic that the goyish shepherd is going to be concerned that we're going to find out and not pay him? The answer is inhu diyadi ba'adoni. The answer is goyim who know about what each other do. They know about each other that they're prone to this kind of behavior to commit bestiality. Therefore, they know about it, new to see. So therefore, the shepherd is afraid to do it because he figures the other goy who himself is into this kind of thing is more likely to realize that I did it. Anan, the loya dinan bahu, we who aren't into such things bechlal, because the Gemara talks about elsewhere that Jews in general are not suspect of mishkav zachar or mishkav behema. So Jews are not involved with such activities at all. Therefore, loy mirtasi. Therefore, the goy is not so nervous. He figures. In other words, think of it like this. Imagine, for example, you see a goy in a compromising position with an animal. If the person who sees it as himself a goy, that's the first thing he's going to think of. Look at this. What is this guy doing with my animal? He's committing bestiality with it. Whereas a yid lives on a different level. A yid is not into such behavior. He might. Obviously, if he sees something blatant, no question about it. But if he sees something that might or might not, that's not going to be the first thing he thinks of, that this is what he's doing. And therefore, the goy is not as afraid to do it. Omar Rabba, so Rabba says, Hainu Damri Inshi, this is like the expression that people say, Machtva Glola Boza, the same way as the stylus can cut through marble. In other words, marble itself is a very hard stone, but it's, so to speak, afraid of the stylus, because also it knows that it's hard, and it knows what something hard is, and that it can scratch letters in it. The same way, Ragla B'chavre Yoda. The same way a ragla, a rochil, Rashi says, a baal lashon hara, a rasha, recognizes the other. It's, in English, you have an expression, it takes a thief to catch a thief. So therefore, in other words, one baal avera knows the other baal avera. He's familiar with their way. They know what's going on. Tosfos brings a different gear, so not ragla.
Want to catch another.
Yeah, it's an expression. But Tosfos brings an exclamation from the aruch, not ragla, but dagla. Dagla, Tosfos says, means a liar. So it takes a liar to recognize another liar. Same idea. In other words, it takes a goy who's into the veil, who's into bestiality, to recognize that another one is doing it. Okay. So we'll continue tomorrow with the discussion. That's where we're up to so far, but that is why we're not allowed to give our animals to goyish shepherds to watch. However, the goyim can give them to each other, and once they do that, we're not worried that the animal may have been used for this kind of thing for the reasons that we said, and therefore you could in turn buy it from the original owner or from the shepherd and use it as a carbon without having to be concerned about Reveya and Nirva and so forth.
Then how
I guess they figured that talking about Ovid Kechavim, it's talking about the old style, talking about the old... Yeah, they may not. Yeah, not necessarily all these centers, which is the Yod center either, yeah.
How do we do that?
We did do that for the lead, yeah.
No, I was still behind the ball.